Hey guys, I'm Heidi Preeb. Welcome back to my channel, or welcome if you're new here. Today on this channel, we're going to be talking about emotional neglect. And in particular, I want to talk about how those of us with that early emotional neglect patterning, meaning those of us who didn't really learn as we were growing up how to make sense of what we were feeling or didn't develop a lot of vocabulary for our inner experiences, can have this bias where we assume that the way to decide what to take action on in our lives needs to be determined by that kind of cognitive thinking mind. And what needs to be ignored in that process, especially if it feels like it's going to interfere with it, is what we are feeling about the events of our lives. So let's say we've decided that a particular field of study is what we should be studying, or a particular job makes the most sense for us to work, or a particular relationship makes the most sense for us to be in. And then as we are pursuing that thing, our feelings start protesting or throwing resistance in the way or whatever it is, what we might be very liable to do is assume that our feelings are wrong and that we need to find a way to kind of fix our inner experience so that it matches what we have chosen to do in the world outside of ourselves. And while I'm not saying that this is never something that we want to do, there are absolutely times to find a way to adapt our inner experience to better match the choices that we know are right for us. Very often, the opposite is also true, which is to say that our feelings are actually there to point us toward areas of our lives where we need to be taking concrete action in order to express ourselves more completely and live a life that feels more aligned from the inside out. So today what we're going to be talking about are 10 instances that you may have learned from a very young age to not take seriously or to dismiss as kind of the wrong feeling that you need to fix or change yourself to get rid of, when in reality, this feeling might be pointing you towards an area where it would be very valuable for you to invest some form of resource, which we often think of as time, attention, energy, or money, into changing the way that you are interacting with something in your life. So 10 inner experiences that we might want to invest some of our resource into doing something about. Instance number one, when we find ourselves feeling really hopeless, pessimistic, or chronically disappointed in people. And this can be either people as a whole, so this can be periods where we're feeling quite cynical and dejected with mankind or with a particular group of people. Or it can be individual people in our lives who maybe we had high hopes for forming a relationship with and ended up chronically disappointed in their capacity to meet us where we're at, or to understand us, or to empathize with us, whatever it is. Now, a pattern I've noticed among people who had early emotional neglect is that very often when we're feeling dissatisfied or disappointed in our relational lives, we don't really think of making the move to do something about it, or to try to influence or change the way that those relationships are happening for us. Instead, what we might instantly go to is, okay, I need to change my own attitude. So I just need to be more positive, or to lower my expectations about this relationship, or to find a way to manage my disappointment when it turns out that this person or this group of people or whatever it is not what I had originally hoped. But sometimes that feeling of feeling kind of relationally helpless and disappointed is actually pointing towards a different problem that might be in the blind spot for a lot of us with early emotional neglect, which is that we have been failing to advocate for our own needs inside of our close relationships. And so, as our relationships go on, either with individual people or inside of organizations or with groups of people, whatever it is, we might find ourselves growing kind of frustrated that other people are getting a lot of what they want, but we are not getting a lot of what we want, not realizing that we have kind of stopped participating in shaping those relationships. Because maybe from a young age, we weren't taught the relational skills of self-advocacy, of saying what we want, of asking for things to be different so that the relationship can feel more comfortable for us. And I find that, again, for a lot of people with early emotional neglect patterning, what we can do is this kind of calculation in our heads, where we'll kind of go, okay, here's what I want, but is it really reasonable to ask for that? And even if I do ask for that, what's the likelihood that I'm going to succeed in getting it? And am I even clear enough on what I want to make that ask? And if I don't get it, and here's all the reasons why I might not get it, is it just going to add all of this tension in the relationship that is going to make it way worse overall to navigate? Right? So we can be really good at talking ourselves out of not expressing something that we want or need out of our relationships if we even notice what those things are in the first place. But the argument I want to make here is that often it's incredibly valuable to make the asks, to express what we're feeling, even if we don't get what we want. Because what we're doing when we practice this skill is we're practicing emotional agency. So giving our inner world the chance to at least express itself and have the opportunity for our environment to meet our needs. And when we make a habit out of doing this, what's really cool is that generally one of two things happens. So one, we either do get that need met, or we do get a particular conversation where at least we get heard out, or we can move on from the situation knowing that we have given it our best chance at getting our needs met. And sometimes this is enough to close some loops in our kind of thinking and feeling world that otherwise would stay open, wondering what if for a very long time. So I remember there was one point in my life where I'd had a romantic relationship end in a way that I thought was fair. Like I couldn't rationalize that this person had done anything overtly wrong, but also I felt like I didn't really get the conversation that I wanted for closure. And so for about 6 months, I sat on this and I noticed myself getting steadily more depressed as time went on. And then I eventually decided, you know what? I'm just going to reach out and let this person know what I'm feeling. So I'm just going to tell them, hey, I really wish we'd gotten to have more of a conversation where I could understand your reasoning and get some context on why things ended in the way that they did. Because even though it was absolutely your right to not want to continue a relationship with me, I felt a little bit abandoned by the lack of closure that I got when we didn't really talk through what was going on your end. And the response that I ended up getting back from this person was definitely not the response that I wanted or hoped for, and the conversation that I wanted to have did not end up happening. But what was really cool was that after a couple of days of sitting with that disappointment, it was like I started to get my own emotional energy back. So the depression and the frustration that I'd been feeling as kind of a low-grade background noise in my brain for months started to quickly dissipate. And I could get back to investing my emotional energy in other things because I didn't have that what-if loop open in my brain, where some part of me knew I didn't fully express what I wanted at the end of that relationship. I didn't fully express what would feel good for me and helpful for me in moving on. And as soon as I knew that I could not get it, it was like this door in my psyche finally totally closed and I could move on. And so this is something that I don't see discussed very often, but I think that those of us with emotional neglect could really, really learn to internalize. When we are advocating for ourselves relationally, we are not just doing it because we might get the thing that we want. We are doing it so that we give ourselves the opportunity to know what's going to happen either way. When we have given our emotional inner world the chance to express itself and be seen and be responded to, even if we don't get the outcome that we want, we can at least close that loop inside of our own systems. And that closure is often incredibly helpful in helping us figure out where to direct our energy next. Now, another area of life where it can matter hugely for us to advocate for ourselves rather than sweeping things under the rug is when it comes to our health. So, a couple of months ago, I had this kind of non-urgent health concern come up. Like there was something that I wasn't sure whether I should be getting checked out or whether it would just go away if I left it for long enough. And something I noticed was that I was kind of putting it into this category in my brain of, I will deal with this if it becomes an emergency or a crisis, but if not, then it needs to go into that ignore and don't worry about it category. And after a bit of time, I realized that the amount of emotional energy I was putting into just having that loop open in my brain was a lot more energy than it would take to just make a doctor's appointment about it. And so I decided to do that, but I wanted the process to be as straightforward as humanly possible, which brings me to the sponsor of today's video, ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free website that helps you find and book doctors who are in network with your insurance. so you can search local providers, read reviews from real patients, see actual real-time appointment availability, and book online. They have a huge network of providers, more than 150,000 providers across 200-plus specialties, which makes it so much easier to compare your options and to find someone who works for your schedule and your insurance. So once I finally did decide to book that appointment that I'd been putting off, I went on ZocDoc and I ended up finding a surprising amount of providers who had appointments available within the next 48 hours. And honestly, even just seeing that availability made the whole thing instantly feel so much more manageable. Because what had been living inside of my head for all of those weeks as this vague, annoying future task suddenly felt like something that I could actually take care of easily. And so a lot of the time when we are putting something off, the hardest part isn't actually doing the thing, it's figuring out what the first step is. ZocDoc removes a ton of that friction by letting you see providers, reviews, insurance information, and appointment availability all in one place. Appointments often happen within 24 to 72 hours, and depending on your area or the type of care that you're looking for, same-day appointments might also be available. So if there's a health-related appointment that you've been meaning to make, this is your sign to stop carrying it around in the back of your head and go get the information you need. Go to ZocDoc.com/HeidiPreeb or click the link in my description to visit ZocDoc and find a doctor near you today. Taking care of your health just got easier. Now, another instance where we might find ourselves trying to fix or get rid of or dissociate from our feelings is when we find ourselves getting kind of obsessive or fixated on specific details of some future plan or event. So this is actually one that personally I still deal with somewhat frequently. Like I will be planning a trip and I'll get really, really fixated on finding the perfect hotel or finding the perfect outfit to wear while not realizing that what I'm actually doing is trying to get an emotional problem solved through kind of practical planning. So often when we find ourselves doing this, when we are either stuck in states of overthinking or anxiety or kind of being really neurotic about how a future plan is going to go, we might once again think that the problem is that we simply need to overthink less or meditate more, or in the other direction, that actually we do just need to find the perfect hotel or the perfect outfit or whatever it is, and then everything will be fine. When a lot of the time, in reality, that feeling of needing to get things perfect is actually pointing towards a totally different problem, which is that we don't trust our ability to cope with what might happen if things don't go well and a difficult feeling comes up for us. So we end up funneling all of this attention into preventing those bad outcomes because we know that we don't really have the emotional coping skills for dealing with something going wrong. So this can look like trying to perfectly plan out a conversation because we're afraid of what will happen if we feel rejected or like we're boring the other person and there's discomfort that comes up inside of it. We might never have learned the skills we need for regulating around that. All of which, by the way, are very normal things that come up inside of conversations and interactions between people all of the time, but we might not know that. Or we might be trying to, again, optimize every single detail of a future plan because we're afraid of feeling overwhelmed or kind of freezing in a moment that really matters if we get something wrong. We might never have learned the skills for regulating around those moments. Or maybe we get really, really fixated for a period of time of planning out what we're going to be doing all of the time because we're afraid of grief or other forms of loss catching up with us if we have any downtime. Maybe we were never really taught what to do with grief or loss, and so we're afraid that if we go into those feelings, we're going to get stuck in them forever. And so the action that might actually need to get taken in this circumstance is not trying to work harder and harder to eliminate the uncertainty of what's happening in our lives. More often, what's going to be helpful is to contain that anxiety by making a plan for how we can deal with those hard feelings if they do arise. So switching the thinking from how do I make sure that nothing is going to go wrong to the question of how am I going to take care of myself if that hard feeling that I don't want to feel does show up. So who might I be able to call up and talk to about it? Or what environment might I be able to go put myself in for a bit that helps me re-regulate? This is a bit of a sidebar, but something I've really noticed with people who grew up with early emotional neglect is that they learn to kind of see difficult feelings as emergencies, right? Because if nobody ever helped us learn to navigate through things like fear or anxiety or disappointment or embarrassment or grief or uncertainty, as adults, we end up getting really focused on preventing those feelings from occurring because we think that if they do, it's the end of the world. But learning that we can encounter all of those things and survive them can be extremely healing and extremely resourcing for us as we go through life. I remember at one point my therapist telling me, you know, learning to feel bad feelings and just get to the other side of them is like a superpower because you don't have to structure your whole life around avoiding stimuli that bring bad feelings up anymore. So sometimes just entertaining those counterfactuals. If I go into a conversation with this person and it's awkward for a couple of minutes, what am I going to do? Can take away a bunch of that anxiety. Or if I go on this trip and the grief that I've been avoiding has some time to catch up with me, okay, how might I tend to or care for or be present with that grief if and when it does show up? If I feel frozen or overwhelmed, what can I do? What environment can I go put myself in to kind of re-resource myself and get myself back inside of my window of tolerance before I keep trying to do whatever it is that's bringing that feeling up? Right? So making a plan B for what happens if those feelings that we're afraid of do arise is often way, way, way more useful for those of us with that early emotional neglect patterning than trying to make sure that everything goes perfect. Third instance, where our feelings might be telling us something kind of counterintuitive about what action we need to take, is anytime we get really fixated on just fixing this one last thing that is wrong with us before we get back into connection with people. So deciding that we just need to lose 15 pounds or get a higher paying job or get more securely attached or fix this one thing that's happening in our psychology, and then we will open ourselves up to connection or to romance or to whatever else it is that we've decided we have to earn. Very often, for those of us with early emotional neglect, we have this fixation the most online when we are the loneliest. Because we might have internalized from a young age that in order to be in connection, we have to do everything perfectly, or we have to be very impressive, or we have to be getting everything right, as opposed to seeing connection as something that can actually be really resourcing for us during the periods of our lives where we're struggling, right? So we see becoming more perfect as our route to getting back into connection. But ironically, these are usually the times when we need connection the most. But what's really cool is that when we realize this is happening, it gives us the opportunity to practice a different pattern. So to go, you know what? I actually need connection the most when I'm feeling bad about myself or down about where I'm at in life. These are the moments where it actually might be most important for me to reach out to friends, for me to ask for some company, even if I feel like I don't deserve it yet. Right? This is how we repattern that part of our brain that thinks connection is this prize that has to be earned for being perfect, into a new pattern that we can prove to ourselves to be true, that we can reach out for connection when we are struggling the most. And often the sign that it's time to do this is, once again, when we notice those kind of thought loops online that I need to fix all of these things about myself, and then I will reinvest in my social life, right? This can be a red flag in the psyche that the time that we need connection the most is right now. Fourth instance where our feelings might kind of want something counterintuitive from us is when we are finding ourselves really addicted to drama. So if we find that we are in a lot of volatile relationships, friend groups, if we find that the only time in which we are kind of snapping to attention is when an emergency is happening, we might assume that this is, again, something we need to fix in our own psychology. So we just need to become less reactive, less responsive to drama, or we need to improve our emotional regulation and get more focused on what matters. When in reality, what this might be pointing us towards is the need for a meaningful challenge in our lives. A lot of us, if we have that early emotional neglect, don't learn from an early age which types of stimulation we need in order to feel activated enough to stay inside of our window of tolerance. And so when we don't have those challenges that feel engaging and purposeful and like they're pushing us towards growth, What can end up happening is that our nervous system starts organizing itself around intensity instead. But the move we need to make here might not be eliminating activation. It might be finding a healthier place to direct that activation towards. So learning to connect with what we actually want out of our lives and letting ourselves move towards self-actualization is often, very unexpectedly, the solution to getting out of cycles of drama. I kind of happened upon this realization from first principles sometime in my 20s when I realized that anytime I was really caught up in a bunch of drama that I didn't want to be caught up in, the easiest way to get out of it was not to try to change my reactions to it. It was to get a bigger fish to fry. So if I had some project I could work on that felt really meaningful to me, it got way easier all of a sudden to say no to forms of drama or distraction that were otherwise taking up a whole bunch of my time and energy. And so sometimes if we're finding ourselves stuck in those loops of paying a lot of attention to things that we feel like are just not worth our time, we might want to try asking ourselves, is there some goal, some challenge, some form of meaning in my life that I could be devoting my energy towards that would make this stuff feel irrelevant, rather than simply trying to change our reactions to it? Can we get a bigger fish to fry? Fifth time when our emotions might be pointing us in a particular direction that we're not noticing is when we are feeling frustrated with ourselves for repeating the same mistakes over and over again. So when it feels like we are just not learning, and we might think that what we need is to just gather more insights or just exercise better judgment or learn more about the problem and stop making the mistakes that we know cognitively we ought to not be making. When really what we need in these instances is often more time inside of our window of tolerance, which means more stability in our lives, more environments where we feel safe and emotionally regulated. And so that kind of higher order reasoning can come online and help inform our decisions rather than being in survival mode where our nervous system is absolutely going to fall back on whichever of those four F responses it thinks is going to be useful in getting us out of that situation. So often, if we find that we have the kind of cognitive solution to a problem, but we just can't get our willpower on board to act in alignment with what we know we ought to do, what we might need to focus on is putting ourselves in a state where we feel more emotionally resourced more often. Because when we're inside that window of tolerance, which I do have a video on that's linked in the description of this one if you have no idea what that term means, essentially what it means is that we're functioning inside of the zone of optimal emotional arousal where we can do things like feel the pain of making a mistake over and over again and integrate and learn from the fact that we don't want to encounter that pain again. And so we actually develop the emotional motivation to behave differently, not just the kind of cognitive rule that we hope we will follow in the future. Right? So we start wanting to take different actions, to test out little experiments of what would I do if I tried things out this way, and then to again actually feel safe and resourced enough to integrate what happens if those experiments don't go as planned. So this is about moving slowly enough to actually give ourselves the space for reflection, integration, and iteration that we need to pattern those new changes into existence, rather than just cognitively being aware of them and then hoping that we behave in accordance with those cognitive beliefs in the future. Sixth situation where our feelings might be pointing us in a direction that is non-intuitive is when we are feeling desperate for any form of external reassurance, validation, or comfort. We might think that what we need in these circumstances is to just be less desperate and needy, or just care less about what other people think of us, or just need less comfort from things outside of ourselves. When in reality, I think that it can be really useful to think of these experiences as kind of akin to having a nutrient deficiency. So if we are not getting enough sources of dignity and healthy pride out of the way that we are living our lives, which is a nutrient that we all need, we are going to naturally try to start sourcing it in other places. And so sometimes when we're feeling like we really want other people's approval, or we're willing to kind of completely contort ourselves to meet some ideal that exists outside of ourselves, it might be a sign that what we actually need to focus on is setting up a life for ourselves that consistently delivers sources of healthy dignity and pride to us. So finding projects that we feel like our skill set is a really good match for, or investing in communities that feel really meaningful to us, or picking a project that we want to spend some time every day devoting ourselves to that makes us feel more like ourselves the more we engage with it. So instead of just asking ourselves to need less in the realm of pride and self-esteem and dignity, what we want to look at is, are there better places where I could be sourcing that, rather than continuing to externalize it, right? Craving that external validation is not always a sign that we're weak or needy. Sometimes we just don't know ourselves well enough. And so kind of trying to continuously rise to other people's expectations is a really close second to our need for significance. And noticing that that's really online for us can serve as just a nudge to start developing towards a direction where we do have those significant needs more consistently satisfied. Seventh instance where our feelings might be pointing us in a counterintuitive direction is when we are finding that our attention is really scattered and we cannot figure out where to direct it. So we might feel like we are just leaking energy all over the place, trying to consistently switch tasks and place our attention on like 10 different areas that feel like they are competing with each other. What we often assume that we need to do in these circumstances is to get better at focusing or to meditate more or to optimize our productivity systems or get better at switching tasks. When in reality, sometimes what we actually need to do in these cases is to make a decision on something and then grieve the other option. So sometimes our attention is scattered because our lives are scattered. We have too many open loops inside of our thinking, and we're trying to keep all of our options open at once. So should I pursue this relationship or should I let it go? Should I commit to this project or should I pivot to something else? Should I stay where I am? Should I move somewhere else? Should I have kids? Should I not have kids? Should I take some time off and write that book that I've always wanted to write? Should I start my whole life over? And because we have all of these open loops operating in the background of our awareness, it's like portions of our energy remain invested in every possible opportunity. But the move here is often not to just become more disciplined. It's to make some clear decisions about which version of the future we're choosing to pursue. So which version we're choosing to direct our energy and our attention towards, and then to grieve the other path. Because every decision that we make necessarily creates both coherence and alignment and direction, but also grief, because there's no path where we get everything, at least not at once, right? So when we choose one path, we lose access to others necessarily. And something I've kind of noticed is that emotionally neglected people can become really good at avoiding disappointment by keeping our options open, because we never really learned how to regulate around disappointment. Okay, so instead, we just keep telling ourselves, yes, maybe all options remain possible. But again, this is how we end up leaking energy all over the place. And so sometimes the energy and the focus and the alignment that we are trying to generate through productivity or focus hacks is actually just something that we would naturally come into alignment with if we were to make a hard decision that we have been avoiding. Okay, decisions cohere our energy, but they also require grief. And so learning to be more present with grief, with disappointment, and with the process of letting go of one potential life path is often the very thing that ends up giving us our energy and our direction back in other areas. Eighth instance where our feelings might be pointing us in the direction of some action that we need to take is when we are finding ourselves trapped in cycles of overthinking. So I do have a video about this that again is linked below if you want to check it out in more detail. But essentially, when we get stuck in these patterns of kind of rehashing the same problem or the same conversation over and over and over again, what we might assume is that we either need to just keep reevaluating the information that we have available to us until it makes more sense, or kind of will or strong arm ourselves to stop thinking about it so much, because we might know on some level that we're wasting our time. When in reality, what we often need in these instances is more reality testing. So sometimes if we have a data set that just is not making sense to us in any coherent way, it might be because we don't have enough data to meaningfully make sense of what we're looking at. So sometimes we do unfortunately just need to go out into our lives and ask someone a question that feels kind of uncomfortable to ask, but that is going to give us more information about what's going on for someone else. Or just apply to that job or that opportunity and see what happens. If you're going to get rejected, at least you'll find out why, rather than endlessly trying to figure out inside of your brain how to avoid it. So again, the thing that's stopping us here might be that we don't know how to regulate around rejection, disappointment, or discomfort. But the more we can make a practice out of acting in the direction of gathering more information, in the instances where we would otherwise be prone to kind of pulling back and waiting until we have the perfect plan, this can often be the move that helps get us in motion, rather than getting stuck in those cycles of trying to make sense out of an incomplete set of data. So again, I have a video about this linked in the description of this video that goes into this phenomenon in much more detail. But for now, ninth instance where our emotions might be pointing us in the direction of some action that we need to take, counterintuitively, is when we are feeling burnt out, exhausted by our lives and our routines, and it just feels like every day we are bumping up against chronic resistance. We might assume in these instances that what we need is to just be more disciplined, to push ourselves harder, to find a way to reconnect to our motivation, when sometimes what we actually need is to recognize that we have hit the point of diminishing returns on some goal that we had, or some relationship we've been in, or some old ideal that we had. And what it's actually time to do is to grieve and rearrange our lives accordingly. Okay, so sometimes the reason why we are feeling so exhausted is because we are, in fact, just trying to go against the grain and push our lives in a direction that it no longer feels good for us to go in. So maybe that means that we are trying to save a particular relationship that's either already functionally over, or that's ready to take on a different role in our lives, right? So maybe a relationship is moving out of that honeymoon phase where it feels very exciting and new and fresh, and into a phase where now it's time to integrate that person into our lives in a bit more of a normal way. So that relationship is no longer going to be the source of all of our excitement and joy, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't still fit. It just means that if we're continuing to rely on it for providing those things to us, we're going to end up perpetually disappointed because we're now at a different spot in the life cycle. Or maybe 5 years ago, we set a career goal that felt so aligned and so on track with what we wanted out of our lives that at no point in the past 5 years have we stopped and gone, wait, is this still what I want? Or at the least, is this still where I want to be putting most of my energy and intention towards? Or were there circumstances that were alive for me 5 years ago that don't apply anymore? And so actually, it doesn't make sense for this particular goal to be my main organizing principle the way it once was. And so it might be time to start letting other parts of our life take center stage instead. So in these instances, when we find ourselves continuously kind of struggling with the questions of how do I make myself stay motivated or keep wanting this thing as I'm working towards it, we can try just testing out the question, is this thing definitely still right for me? So would I choose this thing for myself today if I could freshly choose all over again what I want to be devoting myself to? And again, this doesn't always mean that we need to give up on the thing full stop. It might just mean that it's time to change our relationship to that thing or to change what we're expecting to get out of it. All right, 10th and final emotional signal we're going to talk about today that we might not be great at recognizing if we have early emotional neglect is when we are growing resentful of other people or of a situation that we're in. We might naturally assume that what we need to do is be less sensitive, just let things get to us less, to be more empathetic and understanding of the other person, or to learn to let things go more easily. And all of those can be absolutely wonderful things to do in moderation or in the right context. But sometimes what actually needs to happen is we need to have a difficult conversation with someone. So resentment is very, very often a feeling that comes up when we just keep adapting to something that isn't working for us instead of responding to it. Right? So this goes all the way back to that original piece on emotional advocacy. The move we need to make here might not be to get better at regulating the feelings of frustration we feel. The action we need to take might be more akin to telling the truth, advocating for what's happening for us, and seeing if there's a different dynamic that can be developed out of that. So some kind of red flags to look out for here are, do we find ourselves complaining to our friends or loved ones over and over and over again about the same issue when we have not taken any action to talk to the person who could actually change things for us, right? So talk to our partner about what we're frustrated with inside of our relationship. Talk to our boss about the fact that we're feeling overwhelmed at work. Making the moves that might allow our lives to actually get adapted around what we need can often be something that doesn't even occur to us for those of us who've had that early emotional neglect. But the kind of common thread that runs through all of these examples is that having that early emotional neglect often causes us to see our feelings as the problem in our lives that we need to kind of solve or fix or get rid of, as opposed to listening to our feelings and taking them as signals about where the problems in our lives exist and directing our energy and attention and resources towards solving things externally. So this is about kind of expanding the repertoire of questions that we regularly ask ourselves to go beyond how do I fix or change the way I'm feeling, and to also add other things that we might want to check in on, like is there a conversation that really needs to happen between myself and someone else? Or is there a decision that really needs to get made so that I can close some of those open loops in my brain and move forward? Or is there a loss or a change that's happened in my life that really needs to be grieved so that I can kind of reorganize how I'm spending my time and attention? Is there a desire I have that wants to be expressed, or a challenge that I could go pursue that would help me kind of cohere my energy around something meaningful? Or is there a source of support that I can reach out and lean on so that I don't get stuck in those ruminative patterns of how do I avoid feeling something bad? And now, what this does not mean is that we need to be treating all of our emotions as commands or as things that we need to kind of stop everything to pay attention to. But what it does mean is that our feelings are often containing much more important information than our intellect might assume. So this is about kind of opening up that secure channel of communication between our cognitive minds and our emotional selves, and learning to pay attention to both of them and figure out how the integration of those two things can make our lives start running a lot more smoothly overall. All right, that's all I'm going to say for today on this topic. But as always, any questions, anything coming up for you guys as you've gone through this video, please leave in the comment section below. I love you guys. I hope you're taking care of yourselves and each other. And I will see you back here again really soon.